This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Several generations of St. Louisans, along with fans of horror films and demonology the world over, have heard stories linked to the real-life events dramatized by the 1973 film The Exorcist. Some details in those stories are true. For instance, the person who manifested symptoms of possession was, in fact, a child, and Catholic priests were expressly sought for help. But there's much more about the exorcism itself, as well as the people and institutions involved, that folks get wrong. Caitlin Stamm is associate professor and university archivist at St. Louis University. She joins us now to talk real-life exorcism facts and debunk some myths, too. Caitlin, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Caitlin, let's start with the facts of the real-life circumstances that inspired The Exorcist. First, it was a horror novel, and then a 1973 film. And the biggest fact is that we're talking about an actual family seeking help for a deeply distressing situation. So just to level set here, we'll refrain from using the family's name during today's conversation and use the pseudonym Robbie Mannheim in talking about the child involved. So Caitlin, tell us first then about how Robbie and his family came to St. Louis. Was St. Louis known to have renowned exorcists?
Right, yeah. So Robbie and his family grew up in Maryland, in a suburb of Washington, D.C. And the reason that they came to St. Louis was because the family, by the time it had reached a critical point, Robbie had been experiencing symptoms of possession for several months. And his family found one morning on his chest the word Louis scratched into his chest. And so they took that to mean maybe it means St. Louis. Robbie's mother and her family were from St. Louis. Mm-hmm. So that was why they came here.
Right. And then on the Catholic part of it, this family was not Catholic, right?
No, they were Lutheran.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So coming here to St. Louis, they really did come for a very specific purpose.
They did. And they had sought out some testing, and stories say that they potentially sought out some information from a Catholic priest in their local area who was kind of at a loss for how to proceed.
Mm-hmm.
So when they came here to St. Louis, the way that the Jesuits and the way that St. Louis University got involved was that Robbie's cousin was a student at SLU, and so she went to her professor and said, "My cousin is coming to stay with us, and I think he might be possessed." And that was how the Jesuits got involved.
Mm-hmm. So the principal SLU participants, as it were, in the exorcism in 1949, who were they?
Sure. So it was Father William Bowdern. He had been a Jesuit for a long time and was a former U.S. Army captain, a chaplain. He had been a president of SLU High, and then he had been teaching at SLU. So he was the principal exorcist. And then assisting him was a priest named Raymond Bishop, and he was Bowdern's assistant. And he is someone who maintained a diary of the exorcism the whole way through here in St. Louis. And then finally, there was a Jesuit scholastic named Walter Halloran. He later became a Jesuit priest, but he was not yet ordained. And so those were the three principal people. And Halloran had been Bowdern's driver and didn't know what he was getting involved in. He showed up and Father Bowdern said, "Guess what, we're going to an exorcism now."
That must have been quite a moment between them.
Right, yeah. He tells this story that he thought he was just driving his boss to a dinner party. And then quietly, this priest says, "You're getting out of the car too. You might need to hold this child down while we don't know how the child's going to react."
Right. And the age of the child, I think, is important to point out. Mm. Because in some conversations I've heard from the past, he's referred to as a kid, but he was actually a teenager, right?
Yes, he was 13. He was a 13-year-old boy and had been completely, you know, quote-unquote normal up until that point.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no evidence that something like this would happen, but he was 13.
Right. If you have a question or a comment about this topic we're discussing, I want to invite you to give us a call. Call us at 314-382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can also send us an email at stlonair.show. Now, the SLU and Archdiocese in St. Louis, there's some working together with them on this. How is it that they collaborated on the exorcism itself, Caitlin, or, you know, otherwise help this teen and his family?
So every diocese in the Catholic Church has an exorcist, and that's not usually a public position that you know who the exorcist in the diocese is.
Mm-hmm.
So because the Jesuits were going to be getting involved, and they're not members of the archdiocesan clergy, they're, you know, part of the Jesuits, they had to go and to get express permission from the bishop, from the archbishop, to say, we'd like to participate in the exorcism of this young boy.
Mm-hmm.
And so there had to be agreements made that this would be permitted. And then after the exorcism, there were reports filed with both the Jesuits and with the archdiocese.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is something important. You said that each archdiocese has someone who is anointed, maybe, appointed to be an exorcist. So coming to St. Louis was really connected to what appeared on the boy's chest, what was scratched into his chest. They could have stayed where they were and gotten perhaps the help they ostensibly needed.
Yes. Robbie had undergone some testing at, I believe, Georgetown University Hospital. And there are some reports that he may have begun an exorcism process at Georgetown, but there's no corroborating information for that.
Mm-hmm.
The coming to St. Louis, they could have easily stayed and done something at their home diocese, home parish.
Right. Insofar as the preparation goes, Caitlin, what do you know about how the priest prepared? I mean, were there special rituals involved that there is some archived material about?
We don't have any material about what the preparation was like, but Father Bowdern, who was the head exorcist, he had not been trained as an exorcist. This was not his role. So he had to study up on what to do and what to expect. And he reportedly fasted for the entire duration of the exorcism. So this would have been about a month. And he reportedly lost quite a bit of weight.
Yeah, sure. Wow, that's a long time,
to fast.
Yeah. We have Jeff, who's calling from St. Louis with a question. Jeff, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you. So I feel like every time we have this conversation, no one considers that we make the assumption that demonic possession is real. I wonder if there's some child abuse happening here, and was there psychiatric or medical attention given
Jeff,
to this young man?
Yeah.
No, that's a great question. And I think no matter what you believe, whether you believe in demonic possession or whether you don't, it's so clear that this is a young person who's going through a time of crisis. His family was very responsive to what was going on, and so they did bring him for a battery of both psychiatric and medical tests, and everything had come back normal.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very clear that the family was in a lot of distress about what was going on. And initially, Robbie wasn't the only person who had been hearing things in the house. It had also been his grandmother, and then his parents reported also hearing some things at the beginning stages. So regardless of what you believe, the family was involved, and there clearly was something going on with this young man.
Right. So there were signs outside what just Robbie alone was experiencing.
That's correct.
And as far as when this was happening, we're talking about 1949.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about maybe that time period and maybe what had not developed as far as psychiatric medicine is concerned that you've read about or that you've heard?
No, that's a great point. You know, we are still, it's even in 2024, there's so many things about the brain, about psychology, about psychiatry that we just don't know, even now. And so imagining in 1949, you have these unexplainable things happening to someone in your family, you don't really know how to proceed. And they were really trying with all of the different avenues that were open to them, but could, you know, it was not explainable.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an excellent point. Regardless of what was going on, this is a traumatic event, and there wouldn't have been the psychiatric care available
mm-hmm.
that would have been helpful in this situation.
Jeff, thank you for calling us. Jeff called us at 314-382-8255. Please keep these questions coming and give us a call with your questions or maybe comments, especially those that are based on stories that you have heard or maybe have even told over the years. So, Caitlin, exorcisms, you know, they make great fodder for horror stories, but they're also part of many cultures and religions. To what extent are exorcisms happening today?
It's like I said, every diocese in the Catholic Church has an exorcist, and you typically don't hear about them occurring. And that's just because to the Catholic Church, it's considered a spiritual matter and it's a private matter. And so it's just not something that's publicized.
Mm-hmm.
So exorcisms could be happening around us and we're just not aware of it. I don't know any statistics specifically about how many exorcisms are still occurring today, but
mm-hmm.
there is an exorcist who is on staff for every diocese.
Right.
And of course, certainly we're in a different place, like Jeff is mentioning, in terms of both, you know, social welfare and in terms of psychiatric care. So I'm sure that also has an effect on things.
Mm-hmm. There are several books and documentaries that reference that 1949 exorcism in St. Louis, but the official documentation of this event is locked away. Where are those documents, and why is it that we cannot get our hands on them, Caitlin?
I want to get my hands on it too, Elaine. No, people ask me all the time, what do you have in the SLU archives? Do you have any secret files? And my answer is always no, and it's not a lie that I'm hiding anything. I have a big mouth and I love history secrets.
Okay.
So if there were, you would know about it.
Right.
No, this was really considered to the Catholic Church an open and closed case, and they've never been interested in speaking about it. So it would have been a diary that Father Halloran
mm-hmm.
kept, and it would have been a report, an official report documenting that the events of the exorcism and that it was considered completed. And that would have been filed with both the Jesuits and with the Archdiocese of St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. And as I recall, you had said that Father Halloran was a driver.
So, yes. So,
and became a priest later on.
And excuse me, I misspoke. It was Father Bishop had the diary.
I see.
Too many, yes.
Okay.
We're talking about a lot of different priests.
Yes.
So, no. So Father Halloran later became a priest and mm-hmm. previously had been a scholastic, and he was the driver. Father Bishop was another Jesuit who was keeping a diary at mm-hmm. the time.
I think something interesting to note here, Caitlin, is that you are not a St. Louis native, but you were raised Catholic. And we were also confessing to one another that we have not seen the film. I grew up in the 1980s and 90s, and I heard people talking about this movie all the time, and it was enough to make me not want to watch it. And for you,
it's a similar thing. I'm a big scaredy cat, and I think I was telling you before, Elaine, I was raised Catholic, and I have a particular memory in mind of a priest giving a sermon about, you know, well, in The Exorcist, there's this moment that occurs. And I, similar to you, remember thinking, well, this does not sound like a movie for me. I'll just nod my head and pretend I know the moment we're all talking about.
Right. But I think it gets to this, the fact really, that the exorcism that happened in 1949 and then the film that was that dramatized what happened is so much a part of our cultural language that even if you are not into horror films or you are not of Catholic faith or you do not believe in possession, that this is of some relevance. We have Barb who is calling from South St. Louis. Barb, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to add that my brother was a facilities manager at Alexian Brothers Hospital some years back, certainly after 1949. But he said that after that exorcism took place in that room at the hospital, the room remained very, very, very cold. And so people were not allowed to go in there anymore, and they kept the room locked. Then when the building was scheduled to be torn down, this is the old Election Brothers Hospital, he said every other part of the building came down within a day, but that section of the building that contained that room took at least 3 days to be headache-balled down. It would not come down.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Which I thought was interesting.
Right. So, Barb, when you go by where the Alexian Brothers Hospital was, I mean, is that something that you think about as you pass that site?
Oh, yeah. Because especially since he said that that was what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It came down in the 80s maybe or so, something like that.
Right.
The hospital was torn down in 1978.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I've heard similar things from other people where they've said that the room was really cold or they heard noises or they saw things there. So I hadn't heard that about it not coming down, the room not coming down. That's a new one for me, Barb.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
so,
that's what he told me.
Something to investigate.
No, that's great to know.
Barb, thank you so much for calling in.
Okay, thank you.
So I think that this gets to a lot of what makes this this film something that was referred to by a priest during homily, and then also that people are just talking about generally this many years after. There have been sequels made of the film, but what is fact and what is fiction, I think, is something that is worth mentioning. Now, some of the rumors that people have heard, folks who are from St. Louis, one of them has to do with what happened with a priest. And Elise from the Jeff Vanderloo neighborhood asks, did a priest really jump off a building after performing the exorcism?
I haven't heard that. That's not something that I've heard. There were other things. In terms of people jumping, I had one of the things that's reported in the diary is that when Brother Halloran took Robbie to a Stations of the Cross at the White House Retreat Center, which was the Jesuit Retreat Center here in St. Louis,
mm-hmm.
that Robbie tried to throw himself off of a cliff into the Mississippi and was rescued and prevented from doing that by Father, by later Father Halloran. So
right.
That's the only thing I've heard about jumping, and that's the only, you know, evidence I've seen in the diary.
Mm-hmm. Was there a specific demon that possessed Robbie?
No, it was the Archangel Gabriel, Michael, Archangel Michael,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, was the voice that was coming out at the end of the exorcism to compel Satan to leave Robbie's body.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not a particular demon, but it was Michael. So.
Right. Are there any haunted locations on SLU's campus because of the exorcism?
I wish there was. So Robbie had stayed in the rectory on SLU's campus for St. Francis Xavier College Church on the corner of Grand and Lindell. So he was in the rectory building. And then that building was actually torn down in 1966. So that building isn't even there.
Mm-hmm.
But I do hear a lot of rumors from students and faculty members and members of the St. Louis community about certain rooms and certain halls being haunted and bloody handprints still being on the wall today and a light never turning off. So I hear all kinds of rumors about that, about SLU's campus. But
mm-hmm.
the building where he stayed, unfortunately, was torn down, you know, a few years later.
Mm-hmm. Is there a vault of artifacts from the exorcism that is on the SLU campus?
There isn't. No, we don't have anything that's not available publicly in the SLU archives about the exorcism. Again, I wish there were, because mm-hmm. I love a history secret.
But horror films, no.
Horror films, no, no.
So as we kind of close here for this year, clearly there are many other things to keep exploring and to talk about. Why do you think that exorcisms hold such fascination for people?
I think it's such an interesting idea, and especially considering that time where it's hard to imagine and it's very scary to think about having a loss of control over yourself, not being able to help someone in your family, not being able to explain what's going on with them. So I think it really gets at kind of the psychological things that we're all afraid of. You can do whatever you can to provide a nice home for your family, but
mm-hmm.
you can't help what's going on internally sometimes.
Yeah. Maybe in 10, 15 seconds, what is something you really wish you knew?
Oh, I'd like to know if it really happened. You know, that's something for me. It's I'm just as curious as everybody else. I know certainly Father Bowdern, who was the head exorcist, certainly believed it was.
Mm-hmm. Caitlin Stamm is assistant professor and university archivist at St. Louis University. Caitlin, thanks for talking with us about exorcism facts and fictions today.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy Halloween.
Same to you.
This episode was produced by Maya Norfleet.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Dorr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.